From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host, the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, ever-cape-wearing, forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob. How's it going? Great to be back. Another episode of Bob After Dark.
It is great to be back.
It's great to be back.
Excellent to be back.
Because world traveler.
That was bad. We did an episode last week.
Yeah, I'm saying, but you've been world traveling.
Yeah, it's 2 weeks back to back. That's sometimes
it's hard to believe.
Sometimes unfathomable.
New record right there, yes.
How is it going?
Pretty good. Past a few days, the weekend, it all blends together.
Ooh.
We're recording this.
We're recording this during a thunderstorm. Yeah.
You might be able to hear that.
I'm sure they probably, because this... Wow. The studio soundproofed, but I heard that. That was a loud crack of thunder, sir.
Yeah. Well, that fits the mood of the show, right?
There is no better way to record a paranormal show than during a thunderstorm.
No, not at all.
Now I have to get deep. Yes. It was a dark and stormy night when Cal Panic and Bob went to start researching the dark lore of the world.
Exactly.
Weekend update, Count Panic. What's crack-a-lacking with you, buddy?
I saw, Bob? I am Count Panic, after all, and I saw a movie, Renfield.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. What'd you think?
I liked it. I mean, it's goofy. If you're not into the gore or the guts or blood, you're probably not going to like it, but it's comedic. It's horror. It's Nicolas Cage as Dracula.
Yeah, and... Who plays Renfield?
I forget the actor's name myself.
No, but it looks amazing. It's on my list.
I mean, Nicolas Cage as Dracula. I mean, that's the family I come from. Counts.
Yes. Yeah, so. Are you direct descendant of Dracula himself?
Of Nick Cage.
Grandpa Munster.
Oh, one of those. I was going to say I'm the direct descendant of Nick Cage.
Direct descendant of Nick Cage.
But you know what? If you're into spook, it's nice to have these drops of spookiness in the downtime of the traditional Halloween sense. I mean, put a movie out there. So it was a good movie, but that was really anything of note, I think, that I had going on. Beautiful weekend.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Man. Unusually warm weather in the Midwest for, middle April.
Then it goes back down to 40 degrees.
And then it went back up to 70. I'm surprised I'm still hanging in there. I'm a little under the weather, but I'm not, down for the count, no pun intended.
Not at all. We'll keep thriving.
If this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, we're your weekly-ish podcast where we talk about legends, lore, supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and, of course, Count Panic's favorite vacation he ever took.
Wow, Bob, that's a pretty question that makes you think. Wow, what is the best vacation? We talk about Wisconsin a lot. I think Lake Geneva, Wisconsin is
Lake Geneva's gorgeous.
It's a really nice vacation spot. I've been there a few times and I enjoy it each and every time. So I'm not one to travel crazy like you. I mean, farthest I think it was Florida, and then I went to Canada as a kid when I was really young.
I'm a traveler. You are correct.
But Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, it's Lake not too far from me.
No, a couple hours tops. Maybe an hour and a half. Nice. It is gorgeous. Yep. It is a night. I've been there once. I love Lake Geneva.
Just turn off by the cheese castle at some point and. You're in Lake.
You're pretty much. You're not wrong. You're not wrong at all.
Yeah. Stop at the Cheese Castle. But that's another hot spot for vacation too. The Mars Cheese Castle. Spend the weekend at the Cheese Castle.
I think you can knock out the Cheese Castle in an hour.
No, you sleep in your car in the parking lot. It's like Disney World. You go back in the next day and look at the cheese and everything.
Cheese. No pun intended.
Do you have a favorite spot? You've been a lot of places though. I mean, how do you even choose?
That's hard. Yeah. I mean, I went to Tennessee with my family a couple times as, memorable as, something like that, and happy memories with Dad when he was still around. Yeah. That's a great question. I don't know. New York City always stands out to me. Like, my trips to NYC have always made me happy. Like, that was the city I was planning on, moving to at one point.
Bob in the big city.
I love New York. It's the best city in the world, other than Chicago. It's a tough question, man. I'll get back to you on that. Because I've been coast to coast. I've been to most of the country, so I'd have to think on that.
There you go.
We split the show up into two parts. First part's where we look at the weird, spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, submit stories to me about the weird and unusual. It could be anything from ghost sightings making it into the major media, cryptid sightings, general weirdness, or advances in science that borderline on science fiction. Lately, I've been getting a lot of news articles from old Tim Banal or Banal from Coast to Coast AM. I got two news stories from them here this week. And then one from something completely different.
Wow.
So let's dive right in. Yeah. The second part of the story, the episode, we do the lore of the week. That's the meat and potatoes.
Meat and potatoes.
You eat the meat, I eat the potatoes. Because remember, I don't eat meat.
You're right. I'll take the, you can take potatoes. I'll take all the steak and beef and chicken you can think of.
100%. All right, let's dive right in. Once again, Tim Banal, you are the best.
Now,
I never met the guy. I want to shake his hand and be like, Tim, you know, if it wasn't for you, I probably wouldn't have my opening segment on my podcast.
Yeah,
I absolutely appreciate Tim and what he does. But anyway, new Vatican group to study suspected Marian miracles and mystical phenomena. A group of experts have been enlisted by the Vatican Academy to scientifically examine cases of suspected Marian. And is that the correct enunciation of that? When they're talking about, like, the Virgin Mary? Marian miracles and other mystical phenomena. The intriguing panel is reportedly put together by Father Somfano Chechen, C-E-C-C-H-I-N, who serves as a president of Pontifical International Marian Academy. Among the events which will all be studied by a group are alleged instances of Marian apparitions and cases of perpetuity weeping statues. Additionally, the experts will investigate individuals who claim that they have personally visited by the Virgin Mary, as well as suspected stigmata events and similar mystical phenomena, which seemingly cannot be explained. The ultimate goal of the group, Chechen said, announcing the formation, is to provide concrete support to the study, authentication, and correct disclosure of such events. He went on to argue that it is imperative that the veracity of the cases be determined because often presumed messages generate confusion, spread anxiety-induced apocalyptic scenarios, or even accusations against the Pope and the Church. Addressing the paradox that these events can present, he wondered why the Virgin Mary would sow fear and conflict or undermine the Church when she is the Mother of Mercy and the Queen of Peace. And a testament to how frequently these mysteries and events are said to occur, group member Father Gian Madigo Roggio, R-O-G-G-I-O, reportedly told an Italian media outlet that there are several hundred ongoing phenomena that the Church is following closely in just Italy alone. However, many of these are local and restricted in scope, he said. Not all of them receive attention from the media and the general public. Of course, similar cases of Marian miracles have been reported around the world, which is why the group plans to have a national and international committee look at these incidents. Hashtag panic steak.
Yeah, it is interesting. And you kind of need a committee to look into everything because, again, you don't want to be a Downing Thomas or
no, of course.
Like that,
I mean,
you know, that's why I think it's good to investigate this type of stuff.
You know, it's not a topic we talk about very much on here, but religion phenomena, like religious, I don't want to say paranormal because I don't want to cause that kind
like
of
we
a
had
stigma.
Father Mike talk about that.
Yeah, Father Madge. No, he talked about like the exorcisms and stuff, but I'm talking like non-entity related phenomena, like, the Bible that leaked oil, nobody can figure out why, or the Virgin Mary statue that cried blood.
Right,
I mean, these are phenomena that happen in our world, and I mean, I don't really look at them per se because those are more. I'm not a priest.
Well, neither am I.
Neither are you. So I mean, there's a certain level of things I'm willing to report on. I think that it's bad. I want to say bad juju, but it's almost like a. I don't know if the Church would frown upon us just being like, oh, hey there, Padres. Can we take a look at the crying statue? I don't know if they're into that. You know what I mean?
There's a lot that goes into that, yeah.
But on the flip side, you know, Father Maginot, when we had him on the show, Father was amazing. You know, you guys go back and listen. He was the one, of course, that handled the Gary Demonhouse, Zach Baggins case closely.
Yeah.
He was a great guy to talk to, and he was very open about things that, we, you know, that happened in his career as a Catholic exorcist. So I don't know how they would feel. Like, can you're, I wish you're dead. This is the, like, the one time we're not live when I wish John would call in. Like, how you, so I'm going to ask you to take a wild guess, right? Because you're probably a little bit more educated than me in the regard. How do you think the church would react to a paranormal group stepping up and being like, can I investigate this phenomenon?
I'm guessing not so open to
it. Probably not open to it.
No, I'm guessing
I am
not.
Interested, though, to hear about this group that they're looking at. I'm interested in the cases that they're studying. You know, the stigmata and the crying Mary statues are one thing, but they're saying there's hundreds of cases in Italy alone.
Because even for, like, that type of stuff, I mean, there's a chain of command, too. Like, we got to get permission from, like, exorcisms. They all come from the Pope, right?
Right, so of course.
Can you imagine if we walk up to somebody like, oh, let me talk to the Pope, and I'll get back to
him. Tell the Pope Bob After Dark wants to talk to him.
How about if we just go straight to the Vatican? We could, you know, figure it out from
there. Interested to see who we can talk to about this, because I think it might be worth doing an episode on religious phenomena because I don't know.
It's an interesting
thing I've never really thought about until I read this article and prepared it for this episode. Is do I classify religious phenomena in the same regard as I do, like, ghosts or a cryptid? Probably not.
Yeah.
I would say religious phenomena falls under the same, like, a different category, but it all correlates under the unknown. Yep. I would say religious phenomena would fall under its own category general.
I would say so.
Maybe that's worth doing with permission.
Well, I mean,
maybe because
still talk about it. We just don't know. I don't know if we could interview anybody because
I'm going to put you on that. See, talk to
I think Father
Maginot
might be our best choice at this point. I mean,
who's the bishop in the area? It's not Dale. He's gone, right? He's passed.
No, McClory.
Let's reach out to him and see. Be like, you know, here's what we do. We're very respectful, which we are. I mean, you can't say we're not.
We're
very respectful on everything we do. Yeah. I'm interested to do an episode on religious phenomena, and I think most religious phenomena falls under the Catholicism brain, right? And the Christianity.
Yeah.
Because you don't hear about, like, I don't know. You don't see it in, like, major news outlets that, like, some of the other world, like, leading religions are having the phenomena, like, you know, I'm not going to even go into guessing because I'm not about to cause a religious riot out in front of the studio. But, you know, when you see major news things, I mean, in my lifetime, I've seen, you know, like, big major, like, mainstream news outlets report on the Blessed Mother, like, statues. Yeah. Eyes are bleeding blood. I mean, those are things that have been reported on. I'm interested to do an episode as long as we could do it. I mean, obviously we could do it tastefully, but I'm interested to see. I don't want a bunch of Catholics out in front of the studio here with some signs and canceling me. I don't feel like that today.
I don't think that would happen. But even like, the bishop did talk, I don't know how well-versed, because that's a very interesting realm of it all. That I don't know if they talk about that in the monastery. I'm not quite sure coming up in.
They're having an international panel, which means they have to pick somebody from America to come talk.
Maybe Father Maginot.
Listen, for what it's worth, if I have anybody at the Vatican level that listens to Bob After Dark, which I'm going to assume I don't, but just in case you're out there, because I've never seen a demographic pop up for Vatican City, if somebody from the Vatican listens to my show, which would be kind of cool, Mike Maginot, that's your guy for America. Put him on this committee. He is brilliant. Anyway, interesting story. Yeah. It's kind of cool to see them taking a scientific, like, approach to phenomena like that. Yeah. I think it's brilliant. And in regards, if I could go as far as saying this without insulting anybody, it's like the Vatican put together their own paranormal investigation unit. Really?
Basically,
all right, let's move on. But good story. I'm happy to hear that. All right, next one is a fifth grade class successfully lobbies for Sasquatch protection in Washington State. Once again, this is written by Tim Benall. For the second year in a row, a county in Washington State has declared itself a refuge for Sasquatch after being lobbied by a class of fifth graders. The brainchild of the teacher, Andrea Andrews of Lincoln Elementary School in the city of Holquayum, the unique civics lesson saw her students research defame cryptid and then pen a letter to the local government body in which they argue that the creature needs to be recognized and protected. In 2022, her class convinced Gray Harbor County Board of Commissioners to unanimously pass a resolution in wherein the county has decreed just to such a Sasquatch refuge area. Based on that success, Andrews bought the lesson pack this year in hopes of extending their efforts. In 2023, installment of the project reportedly accumulated earlier this month in a meeting at Callahan County Commissioners, wherein Andrews' class appeared before the board via Zoom and made a class for Bigfoot. In response, local officials passed a resolution observing that legends, sightings, research and investigation, and recognition by other municipalities support the notion that Sasquatch exists. The proclamation goes on to post that if Bigfoot exists, then it is likely an endangered species. Makes sense. By virtue that the scarcity of the sightings, as such, the creature should be protected. With that in mind, the board officially declared that the county to be a refuge for Sasquatch and requested all the citizens recognize the creature newfound protected status. While the resolution may not be legally binding in the sense that there is no specific punishment for ne'er-do-wells that somehow harm Bigfoot, The proclamation provided by the fifth graders with a valuable lesson on local government. To that end, Andrew celebrated her classic success by marveling that my class did it again. Fifth graders are saving Sasquatch one county at a time. Congratulations, my dear. Andrea Adams, congrats. That's amazing. Hashtag panic stick.
Yeah, Bob, I'm a big Bigfoot Sasquatch fan, actually.
You are, yeah.
I know my mom is, too. And that's good. This is some good stuff. I mean, we need more hoopla for the Sasquatch.
For what it's worth, I know what she's trying to do.
Yeah.
It is a extremely,
yeah.
It's a local political thing,
I
right?
Get it.
Teach your students how to raise awareness for a topic and get it protected at the local government level.
Yep.
I get what she's doing, and I think it's absolutely brilliant. Good for her. That's really cool that the local government took the time to, you know, right back as and like take them seriously.
Yeah,
that's pretty impressive. We're gonna see, make a note. Let's see if we can reach out to Andrea and see if we can talk to her on the show.
Yeah.
We also have to talk to that Wisconsin antique store. Remember who stole the Sasquatch? We gotta get in touch with them.
Yeah, that's right.
So let's make a note on both. Yep,
Sasquatch.
We're gonna make a note on both.
Yeah,
we'll talk after the show.
Sure.
All right. Let's move on to our last story here before we dive into the meat and potatoes. This one comes to us from Oddity Central. Pastor finally buried 2 years after his death because family awaited his resurrection.
Wow.
South African pastor Siva Moodley died in 2021, but his body was only laid to rest this month after spending almost 600 days at the mortuary because his family and parishioners were expecting him to come back to life.
Really?
Siva, the founder of the Miracle Center of Gauteng, north of Johannesburg, died August 15th, 2021, after falling ill. However, instead of making preparations for his funeral, his family simply left his body at a mortuary awaiting his resurrection. His wife and other members of his family came to the mortuary to pray for his return, but stopped coming after a few months after his death and refused to give consent for Moodley's burial or cremation. To make matters worse, they even refused to acknowledge the pastor's death within the church, conducting services in his place until the day he decided to come back to life. After months passed and Siva's body remained at the mortuary, the owner started contacting the family trying to obtain their consent for burial or cremation, stating on numerous occasions that failing to dispose of the body in a timely posed serious mental and health, health and environmental risks. Again, makes total sense. They failed to obtain Moodley's consent, and the deceased pastor's family stopped replying entirely. In the end, the only option available to the mortuary was to take legal action against the family. I can't blame them.
Yeah.
It is a civil matter. I cannot make the decision to bury or cremate him on my own, the mortuary owner said. It has come from his family, but they are not saying anything. He was a well-known man and does not deserve this kind of treatment. I hope the court can provide some kind of relief. Court documents showed that Moodley's widow, Jessie, explained her family's reluctance to consent to the pastor's funeral by claiming that she had a vision of the religious leader coming back to life. However, after seeing evidence that the family has been contacted a total of 28 times about the man's body and receiving reports from local authorities about the health hazards posed by the body, at the Gauteng High Court in Johannesburg authorized a mandatory burial or cremation. By the way, the city's called Gauteng. If I'm pronouncing that wrong, I apologize. The court's decision was to spend for a month so that it could be served on Moodley's and immediate family. The funeral home clarified that they did not want to infringe on anybody's religious freedoms, but they had to abide by health regulations. On March 16th, Moodley's body was finally laid to rest at West Park Cemetery in Johannesburg in the presence of his siblings and extended family. His wife and two children did not attend the ceremony, and the South African media report that they are continued to lead the Miracle Center in the pastor's place. There is no mention of Woodley's passing even on the Christian ministry social media. Hashtag panic stake.
Yeah, I mean, I different people believe different things, and they were hoping, of course, that they're maybe coming back to life. But at the end of the day, I could see how, cruelty. Leave the dead alone, I guess you should say. I get what they were trying to do. But, I get the heart was in the right place, I guess, but you should have buried him, I guess.
I am having a very hard time saying this, but, man, you need to bury that body.
Yeah.
I understand grief. Listen, I've been dealing with grief pretty hard this past year, as all of you guys may know. However, I will tell you that you probably should do the right thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not just saying that from like a morality standpoint, but man, if the funeral home director and the people conducting the body stuff, we'll just say, if they're saying, hey, this is posing like an actual like health hazard to us and an environmental hazard to us around us, you should probably dispose of that body correctly and morally sound. I understand you had a vision, and man, if that's the case and that's you believe it in your heart of hearts to be true, give it some time, but you can't wait 2 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you could give it whatever. I don't want to condone that action either.
No.
Just, you have to pay respects to the dead man.
Of course.
You have to.
Yeah.
And whether that be burial, cremation, whatever your belief system is fine. I ain't gonna, whatever. You have to do something. You can't just keep that around. You know what I mean?
Exactly, like, yeah. Do the right thing.
Do the right thing. Yeah. That's all I really got to say on the matter.
Yeah.
All right, Count, you want to take a quick break?
Right now?
Right now.
I can do it.
All right, folks. All right. For our podcast fans, stick around. You're about to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
And we're back. Oh, hey there, Cal.
Oh, hey, Bob.
What did you do during break?
Bob, you would be very excited to know. I went to Lake Geneva.
How was Lake Geneva?
Oh, great. Then from Lake Geneva, I hit up the Mars Cheese Castle. Got every type of cheese imaginable in that darn place, and brought it back here.
That's great.
Yeah. What'd you do?
I went outside with a giant pole to see if I can conduct some of this lightning.
Is that safe?
No, I don't condone that. Oh. I was trying to get superpowers.
I mean, for some, maybe, possibly. I mean, electric shock, you just zap things.
No, I was trying to get superpowers.
Yeah.
Didn't work.
That's one way to do it.
I luckily didn't get shocked, but I came to my senses and stopped doing that. Bob After Dark does not condone any running outside with giant poles or wrapping yourself in tinfoil armor to get superpowers.
Don't do it.
Good disclaimer right there.
That's a great disclaimer. Yeah.
Just in case.
Yeah. Hey, Count.
Yeah.
If I was to say lumberjack lore,
lumberjack.
What is the first thing that comes to mind?
Paul Bunyan, probably.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. So, imagine if you will.
Yeah.
Imagine if you will. You are a lumberjack.
Lumberjack.
And
I'm a lumberjack.
You're a lumberjack, especially during the times of, like, you know, pre-industrial revolution.
Okay.
You are out there, you're chopping down wood, you're
a
logger.
Going crazy, yeah.
And there's no modern technology. You ain't listening to podcasts.
No.
You know, you don't even have a chainsaw. Everything you're doing is by hand. So it's a very dangerous job.
It is.
It still is, but it's a very dangerous job. And you are working hard, 8-12-hour days, let's say. And your two options of fun are to drink alcohol and eat. What are you going to do other than that to entertain yourself?
That's all I could do?
I mean, that's what you have at your disposal. You got food and alcohol. That's it.
I guess what more can I ask for in life? All right, that's the thing.
You got to do something to entertain yourself.
You got to chop some trees or something, right?
What's your job? That's saying you got to do something else.
Geez, well, what can I? What else can I do?
Tell stories with your friends.
Oh yeah, all right. I can
you know, pass a pet. You know, have a bonfire.
Yeah.
Get really drunk with your friends
and that's a part of drinking. Yes.
Yeah, you tell some ghost stories when you're drinking and whatnot. Yeah. But the lumberjacks, believe it or not, had their own lore about you know creatures like cryptids and legends in their own field.
Okay.
So Paul Bunyan is obviously the most, like, geez, I'm dropping my water here.
Careful.
Is the most well-known lumberjack lore phenomenon in, you know, America.
Got a thing with Scott Bells.
If I told you again, lumberjack lore, you're going to be like, oh yeah, Paul Bunyan and his ox, Babe.
Babe, the blue ox.
The blue ox. Yeah. You move on, right?
That'd be all.
And that's, I did an episode many moons ago about Paul Bunyan.
That's right.
And I sat here for 5 minutes and I was like, what am I going to do?
Well, Paul Bunyan, I mean, that's a legendary character. Like I said, they gave him his old breakfast buffet or at
exactly.
Wisconsin Dells or whatever. Yeah.
However, so outside the concept of Paul Bunyan, the lumberjacks had what was called the fearsome critters. And I'm reading this from the Cryptid Wiki. Insert Chewbacca noise here. Fearsome critters is a term to describe any mythical or folklore creature from early lumberjack tales that were said to inhabit the wilderness of North America. Fearsome critters were an integral part of oral tradition in North American lumberjack camps during the 20th century, and this tradition continues until nowadays. The character of the fearsome critters was usually more comical than frightful because it used as its means to pass time or jester hazing newcomers. A strange noise in a sight that they encountered or campers that lost into the wild usually used as an inspiration to create these tales. Lumberjacks who regularly traveled between camps would stop to swap stories in time, spreading these myths around the continent. Many fearsome creatures were simply the products of pure exaggeration, while a number, however, were used seriously or jokingly as explanations for unexplained phenomena. For example, the hide behind served to account for loggers that failed to return to camp, which we'll talk about here in just a moment. The more physically emphasized and more improbable creatures seemed to be distinguished by how far the storyteller could push the boundaries of biomechanics.
That makes sense.
Both the Tripordo and the Snellagoster demonstrate facts most in common with mechanical apparatus than animals. And the Hugag and the Sidehill Gouger
yeah.
seem to play more on applied physics than fanciful inspiration. While much of the literature that has been written on the subject echoes a naturalist perspective commonly specifying a range of distribution, behavioral habits, and a physical appearance, it should be noted that many of these myths were never widespread, as it's common to find a lack of consensus on a specific fearsome critter. It is not clear contradictions. To illustrate, the Wampus Cat differs widely between Vance Randolph's We Always Lie to Strangers and Henry H. Tyron's Fearsome Critters. While Tyron describing a cat with panthographic forelimbs, Randolph portraying it as a supernatural aquatic panther. Hmm. So we're going to talk a little... So now you got an idea.
Clue,
yeah, but you got your own... So. Yeah. The Lumberjacks had their own cryptids called
amazing.
Fearsome Critters.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about a few of them here. So as the article we talk about here ends and it says that they're, you know, kind of, they're very hard to find research on.
Yeah.
It's because they're all oral stories. These guys didn't write them down.
Passed down from generation
to generation. So like, if a lumberjack walked into a camp, let's say from Seattle to Portland, Oregon, and let's say that it's maybe in Portland you have a scribe like that's in town, maybe hanging out at the tavern.
Yeah.
They may pick up on this. They might hear the story and then they may jot it down and that's all we got. But for the most part, it's called, I got drunk and I'm going to haze the news guy and say, hey, that's a, what's it come up, bop? that's a creature that's coming for you. You know, it's hard to find research on these things, but thanks to Wired.com.
Wired.com.
I found a list of interesting ones that I want to share with you guys.
I want to hear them.
With the most ridiculous illustrations I have ever seen on a cryptid. In the show notes below, guys, you can go and click on these and take a look at it for yourself. I mean, cryptids, the cryptids I deal with are odd and strange creatures, like the man-eating gourd. That is ridiculous. Or the pants, the Fresno Nightcrawler. That is ridiculous. But these things are just dumb.
Wow. Well, more than the eating gourd? The pumpkin eating gourd?
More like the
what's that called?
The man eating gourd.
The man eating gourd, okay.
The man eating gourd. All right, so let's talk about the hugag, H-U-G-A-G. And there are scientific names for these. I am not a scientist. I just play one on TV. The scientific name is Rhythmopes inarticulatus.
All right.
Rhythmopesinarticul.
Wow.
A-T-U-S.
That's like the spelling bee word.
The hugag. Yeah. The hugag, all right? And they say these things are responsible for fallen trees. And I know I said Wired.com wrote this article. I'm trying to find the actual person who wrote it, and I'm not seeing an author on here. So if you wrote the article and you actually went through and did all this research, hats off to you, my friend.
How about that?
All right, so Canada has the moose, but America has the 13-foot-tall moose-like thing that has coagulated ears and an upper lip that is so long that the beast must take care not to trip over its own lower lip. According to William T. Cox in his seminal encyclopedia, Fearsome Creatures of the Lumber Woods, the source for many brilliant scientific names that we're reading in this article, the hugag is a perfect mania for traveling. It's harmless to humans, but it is saddled with a fairly serious handicap. It has no knees, so it has to goose-step around like every day is a military parade. Accordingly, the hugag can't lie down on account of it not being able to get back up. So to sleep, it must lean against trees. And that is why you hear trees fall at night. It's not the beavers compromising the structural integrity of such vegetation or the dead trees falling over their own regular occurrence in the forest. It's the floppy-lipped hugag.
I gotta see the photos of these. I'm gonna check it out after the show.
It is likely inspired by the moose, which iconically Canadian can also be found in Northern Europe and Russia. It also roams the Northern United States, hence the adoption in American lore. So, it's this stupid moose with no knees and a giant lower lip that it could trip over.
Yeah.
And again, it's supposedly very heavy, and when it lay, you know, props itself up against a tree, it knocks it over. So if you hear a tree falling in the distance of the woods, you're dealing with a hugag.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. That's knocks it down as far as options go.
It's harmless to humans. So it's just, you know, the new guy wakes up, you guys have been having a long night of whiskey drinking, and you hear a tree fall, you're like, oh, knock that down. And old man Skippy's like, ah, where's the hoggag?
Does the tree really fall? Yeah,
the hoggag, you see. All right, let's move on to the Splinter Cat. Splinter. I'm not going to pronounce these scientific names anymore. It's NASA. I'll try it one more time. Nasus Ophictiatus Oarbomolius. You get the idea. Or the Splinter Cat. The Splinter Cat, you see. And this one's responsible for shattered trees. This husky feline is an indiscriminate destroyer of hollow trees, which it mines for bees and raccoons. Climbing a tree, it propels itself off with powerful legs right into another, blasting the trunk with its wedge-shaped snoot and reinforced noggin. The experienced frontiersmen know well the moronic activities of the Splinter Cat. This was written in the Fearsome Critters Encyclopedia in 1939. If the cat finds food in a ruptured trunk, he is temporarily appeased. If not, he goes immediately for another tree. And right there is big trouble. The cat doesn't use any judgment in selecting trees. He just smashes one after another until he gets his meals. Like many cat tribes, Tyron adds, he's strictly a night traveler and hence is rarely observed, but he's often heard, and the abundance of his work is ample evidence for his existence, numbers, and activity. In reality, the Splinter Cat's destruction is the work of lightning. When a tree is struck, sap boils in the stream, and steam forms as cells in the wood explode. If the path of the lightning runs along the edges, the tree can survive, less than a good amount of, without bark. But if it travels down to its core, the whole tree can just pop as if it was loaded with dynamite or whatever, sending wood shards and branches flying everywhere. The next one I want to talk about is the Gumbaroo.
The Gumbaroo. That's a fun name to say.
Megalogaster repuccus. I almost got that one good.
Bad. Yeah.
The Gumbaroo is much like a bear, you see, though it's hairless save for prominent eyebrows and for some long bristly hairs on its chin. But the body is smooth, tough, and shiny, and bears not even a wrinkle, according to Cox. Its hide is so tough, in fact, that it can repel hornet stings, charging elk, and even bullets.
Even bullets?
Yes. By the way, this thing's responsible for forest fires.
Like Smokey the, so Smokey the Bear would
no, this, yeah, this, this is Smokey the Bear's worst
enemy.
Like,
yeah.
Jeez. The Gumbaroo is much like a bear, and I was saying, you know, it's got all these different things. And Tyron notes that a certain S.W. Allen photographed one, but then the negative exploded. So he took the picture, and when as the film was developing, it just exploded.
It just exploded.
Yeah. Perhaps this is extremely combustible beast is said to burn like celluloid film. Heat makes the thing swell and explode, and that's how we get forest fires. Frequently during after a forest fire in the heavy cedar near Coos Bay, woodmen have insisted that they heard loud reports quite unlike the sound of falling trees and detected the smell of burning rubber in the air. The location of Coos Bay in Oregon could be a clue to the source of this myth. Beginning in the Great Gold Rush, the eucalyptus tree were imported into the American West from Australia to provide burning wood and fuel. Though Cox specifically mentions that the fire being heavy cedar, there could have been, well, a eucalyptus tree interspersed, and the invaders known for their proclivity to explode in forest fires. But there's no Gumbaroos in Australia, so it's just here.
Just here?
Just here.
So, okay, well, then we're good then. It's just here.
So if you take a picture of this Gumbaroo, it's just going to explode. the bear is, the film's going to develop, and the bear is just going to explode.
What is your phone? Can you take a picture on your phone?
Well, I'm just telling you, you go find
one. There's different ways to take pictures nowadays. I just wonder if your phone will explode the same way. I don't know.
What do you think so far?
I think the last one might have been my favorite. I like the fact that exploding camera, just when you take a picture of it. It's pretty funny to think about.
I don't know, man. Is there more that you could, like, compared to regular, like, cryptids that we have, what's some of the ones that you're a fan of?
If you're asking for one, I think that I'm going to go with, what was the last one's name? It was a fun name to say, too.
Oh, jeez, what was
the exploding camera.
The
Gumbaroo.
I can't even say
the Gumbaroo,
the Gumbaroo.
Right? Yeah, the Gumbaroo. Let's put the Gumbaroo at the top for right now. For right now.
Yes. All right, let's talk about the Hide Behind.
The Hide Behind
is a nocturnal, fearsome creature from American folklore that preys upon humans that wander into the woods, and was blamed for the disappearances of early loggers when they failed to return to camp. As the name suggests, the hide behind is said to be able to conceal itself. When an observer attempts to look directly at it, the creature quickly hides behind an object or behind the observer themselves, and therefore they cannot be directly seen. The hide behind supposedly uses its ability to stalk human prey without being observed to attack them without warning. Said victims, including lumberjacks and others who frequent the forests, are then dragged back to the creature's lair to be devoured. The creature subsists chiefly upon intestines of a its intestines of its victim, and has severe abrasion to alcohol, which is therefore considered a sufficient repellent. Drink more, my friends, you won't get eaten by the hide behind. Tales of the hide behind may be used as an explanation for strange noises in the forest at night. Early accounts describe the hide behind as large, powerful animals, despite the fact that no one was ever able to actually see one.
That's the thing. That's the tense of the name, I guess, hide behind, right?
This episode goes right out the door.
That makes sense, though, Bob, to me. I mean, that total sense.
All right, so Pecos Bill said the kid caught a hide behind and hopes to donate it to his zoo.
Okay.
Fun fact. And there's actually a 2018 short horror film called The Hide Behind, directed by Parker Finn. So beware of the hide behind, folks.
Yeah, the hide behind.
The hide behind. Yeah. All right, do you still like that better? Do you like the Goombaroo better?
I'm still going with the Goombaroo as my favorite so far. But the hype is a wacky character within himself.
All right,
a lot of stories that entity could tell.
All right, let's talk about a couple more here. One is the Sidehill Gouger. In American folklore, a Sidehill Gouger is a fearsome creature adapted to living on the hillsides by having legs on one side of their body shorter than the legs on the opposite side of the body. Okay. So if you can imagine, this thing's living on the side of the hill. Mm-hmm. It's got short legs on one side and long legs on another. So that just makes it evolutionary possible to be living on the side of the hill.
That makes sense.
Anyway, having evolved, kind of look like pangolins, humans, and bears. It kind of looks like that. But the allows them to be able to walk steep hillsides, although in one direction, when lured and chased into a plane, they are trapped in an endless circular path. Some claim that these creatures play a larger role, in some cases are responsible for the creation of hoodoos. Hmm. The creature is vicariously known as the Sidehill Dodger, the Sidehill Hoofer, the Sidehill Gazink, the Sidehill Unzel, the Sidehill Lopper, the Sidehill Galoot.
The Hoofer was a fun one.
The Hoofer. Here's another one for you. The Gaia Scutus. The Sidewinder. The Wampus.
Oh, wow.
The Buffoom. The Buffoom.
Okay.
The Gouda Perot. The Hunkus. The Rickaboo Wrecker. The Proc. The Gwinter. And the Cutter Cuss. Sidehill Gougers are mammals who dwell in hillside burrows and are occasionally depicted as laying eggs. They're usually 6 to 8 pups, which I guess is the scientific term for the Sidehill Gouger, folks. We're only dealing in real sciences here. And since the gouger is footed for hillsides, it cannot stand on level ground. If by accident a gouger falls from a hill, it can easily be captured or starved to death. When a clockwise gouger meets a counterclockwise gouger, so when one runs one way and one runs the other way, they have to fight to the death since they can only move in one direction. The formation of the pterocetes have been attributed to the gouger activity. Gougers are said to have migrated from west of New England, a feat accomplished by a pair of gougers who clung to each other in a fashion comparable to a pair of ducks going home from town with their longer legs on the outer sides. A Vermont variation is known as the Wampahoofus. It was reported that farmers crossbred them with their own cows so they can graze on easily on mountainsides.
Okay.
Frank C. Wiltmore and Nicholas Houghton, in joint tongue-in-cheek response to an article in the Smithsonian Magazine, expounded a taxonomy of Sidehill Gougers. Nothing in particular, the Sidehill Dodger, which inhabits the driftless area of Wisconsin, and the Dexter Hill approaches, although downside is notably stouter. So these guys actually like sat down and wrote down a scientific description on how these things actually work.
Yeah.
A special award. The Order of the Sighthill Gouger is awarded to worthy members for hard and long-standing volunteer efforts by the Alberta Group of Royal Canadian Air Force Associations. So you can become a Sighthill Gouger yourself by doing work for that group.
Okay. But it seems like there's a lot that goes into the last one, because they're fighting each other at some point because they can't work around each other. The Hoofer is fighting the Wampus. So there's a lot going on here.
All right. Another one is the Cactus Cat.
Cactus Cat.
We talked about the Cactus Cat briefly in the show before, but we'll go over it again.
Sure.
The Cactus Cat is a legendary fearsome critter of the American Southwest. The Cactus Cat was genuinely described as being a bobcat-like creature covered in hair-like thorns, which particularly long spines extending from legs and its armored breech and tail. The creature was said to use the spines to slash cacti and night, allowing juice to run from the plants. On later nights, the creature was said to return to drink the now fermented juice. Then the drunken creature was said to howl throughout the night, and the Cactus Cat was a very hostile creature towards animal and its territory. Animals that crossed them often ended up with large puncture wounds and sometimes fatal injuries. It was a desert predator. To avoid harsh heat, they'd carve the inside of a cactus out and sleep in it throughout the day. It would eat bugs in the juice of the cactus, keeping hydrated. They were said to be immune to scorpion venom and would hunt scorpions at night. Mm. Cactus cat were social animals, often mating for life. They were said to live about 20 or 30 years at a time. Before and during mating season, the male felines would break open a large saguaro cactus and let the smell attract females to location. Often enough, two females would attract to the scent and fight. The fight usually ended in one of them getting brutally spiked or stabbed to death. The winning female would then meet the male and drink the cactus juice. The pair would get drunk and produce a litter of kittens within the next few weeks. The kittens were blind at birth with no spikes.
That's a lot. So, okay. I feel like I heard this before. The character for sure, Cactus Cat, but to drink the actual... entity. It's a. I don't know if I like. I still. You know. I'm still going with my favorite one is the camera one though. I forgot. There were so many creatures already.
All right, we're going to talk about one more, because the most famous one is the jackalope, but the jackalope has a lot of information. Before. Yeah, we've done it. We'll talk next week. We'll do an entire episode based on the jackalope, because there's actual lore involved with it. They're the most popular fearsome critter. Yeah. But we're going to talk about one more here, and that's the axe-handle hound.
Axe-handle hound.
In American folklore, the axe-handle hound is found in Minnesota and Wisconsin. The animal resembles a dog with an axe-like with a body that's axe-like in shape. It has a head that is shaped like an axe blade, hence the name, complemented by a handle-shaped body atop a short, stubby legs. It subsists on a diet consisting entirely of handles of axes, which, if left unattended. So if you leave your axe unattended, the axe-handle hound will come and eat it.
Big no-no, yeah.
It's a nocturnal creature, and the axe-handle hound travels from camp to camp searching for its next meal. In Minnesota, there is a canoe access campground named Axe-Handle Hound after the folklore creature. It can be found on the Little Fork River near Voyageurs National Park, very near to the town of Linden Grove.
That's a good, moral for anybody.
More, if you're a lumberjack and I'm an old man teaching a young man, you left your axe unattended there, Sonny. The axe handle hound is going to come eat that thing if you don't keep an eye on it.
Sounds like a prospector in a way.
I don't know how lumberjacks sound, man, so just deal with it.
Either way. But that's a good lesson. I mean, never leave your axe unattended.
Because the axe hound will get it.
The axe handle hound.
All right, so... compared to cryptids, right? Because some of the cryptid stories out there are meant to scare you.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like 100%, they're fearsome creatures. Or they're creatures of scientific anomaly, principles, anomalous principles. So they're characteristics, I should say. So they could do things that are very strange and science can't explain it. Then you have the fearsome critters, which are creatures that the lumberjacks talk about, which for the most part try to teach you a lesson.
Yeah, yeah.
They believed it was real.
Well, true. And I think, too, it's good that The lessons are the main thing, right? So if you, they spook you a little bit, so they say the thing about the axe or the pictures, they spook you into all these things to believe in them. And it works probably for the most part for up-and-coming lumberjacks.
I would say so. If I was, like I said, if I was the old-timer, I'd be telling these stories to these young folk to
set them
straight. Yeah. What was your favorite fearsome critter we talked about?
I'm sticking to my guns here.
You were a big fan of the Gumbaroo.
The Gumbaroo. I like the backstory of the Gumbaroo.
Took a picture, it just explodes.
That's my go-to, the Gumbaroo.
I like the axe handle, huh, man? That's
you like that? You're that one.
Dude, don't leave your axe unattended. That dog's going to come eat your axe.
That's true.
It has no threat to person, just their axes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, but if you lose your axe, you lose your livelihood.
Exactly.
So there you go. That's even worse.
Do you have any closing words for our audience this evening as we wrap up?
The fact that, you know, I feel like becoming a lumberjack right now. That's my words. But if you do become a lumberjack out there, or lumberjill, just remember, don't leave your axe behind.
Don't leave your axe behind, and beware taking pictures of the Gumbaroo.
It's my favorite.
The Gumbaroo will explode. Just don't take a picture.
We do a whole episode of the Gumbaroo.
I didn't. What do you want me to do? Just sit there and keep talking
for
about
an hour long.
Hour-long Gumbaroo episode. Yeah. Let me just take pictures and it explodes.
There's probably case studies about them.
I'm curious if these stories are still told around, like, lumberjacks. I know the article says they do, but
do you know any lumberjacks?
I do not. Do you know any lumberjacks?
No, I don't either.
I'm going to look out. I'm going to see if I can find some lumberjacks and be like, do you guys still tell these stories to each other?
Do they all hang out together? I don't know.
Folks, thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Count Panic, we just want to say goodnight to all of you. To Mom, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable, and doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are, not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.